Our second case this morning is United States against Green. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Chief Judge Efron, honorable members of this court, I'm Captain Andrew Lunsticker, along with Colonel James Rung. We represent the appellant in this case, Tech Sergeant James Green. Appellant believes the central issue in this case involves issue number two, involving post-trial discovery. So what I'd like to do is briefly address the first prong of Strickland as it relates to deficient performance of counsel and go directly into the prejudice as it relates to the post-trial discovery, Honor. Appellant was denied his Sixth Amendment right to effective assistance of counsel when, prior to trial, his defense counsel failed to obtain mental health records of the victim, CM, in this case, from Lakeside Hospital. Prior to trial, we know for a fact that defense counsel knew that the victim, CM in this case, was involuntarily placed in Lakeside. Lakeside was a lockdown facility, that it treats adolescents for drug and alcohol abuse and behavior problems. She was placed there because of her lying, insubordination, sexual activity, and drug use. All of these signs that the defense counsel knew should have been red flags, should have raised defense counsel's awareness that she should have investigated this stay at this hospital further.
Counsel, before you get into your substantive arguments, I have kind of a side issue to ask you so we can get it out of the way.
Yes, Your Honor.
On JA-167, those are the notes of the defense investigator when he interviewed CM. And in that interview, CM said that she lied about Green having sex with her, that he never touched her. She was getting stressed out about lying, and the entire interview was basically that everything she said was false. And yet, as I read the record, she wasn't impeached upon that document at all, or there was some reference to having denied the allegations, but she wasn't specifically impeached by that. And that wasn't brought up as part of the ineffective assistance of counsel. Was there something there that the record doesn't divulge, or a reason why that wasn't raised?
I think at trial, in the record of trial, the defense counsel did bring that out on cross-examination. I don't have the specific cite to that page. I know that the trial defense counsel raised a couple issues of her lying in the cross-examination.
At one point, she was asked whether or not she had denied making those allegations, and she just said yes, and they moved on.
Correct, yes, Your Honor.
Is that what you're discussing?
Yes, Your Honor.
There is extensive cross-examination, though, is there not, on inconsistencies and changed testimony?
There is, Your Honor.
So it is fair to say that the issue of truthfulness was drawn out on cross-examination.
Yes, Your Honor.
You're saying there's something missing that might have allowed a greater access to that argument.
Correct, Your Honor.
Now, the allegation on prong one is that the trial counsel failed to fully investigate. Could you just outline what it is that appellate counsel have done to fully investigate the existence of the record and to establish what they would or would not say in furtherance of your argument?
Appellate counsel has attempted to obtain those records from Lakeside. However, that motion was denied by the Air Force Court.
So did you contact Lakeside and request the records?
We have not, Your Honor.
Have you contacted a custodian of records at Lakeside to determine that they exist?
No, Your Honor.
Have you asked anybody at Lakeside what might be in such a record?
No, Your Honor.
So, to be perfectly direct, what is it that trial counsel failed to do that you haven't done yourself or have done yourself?
Well, Your Honor, at this point, appellate defense counsel doesn't feel that they could get those records, even get ascertain if they exist due to mental health rules, regulations wouldn't permit us to even go in there.
You didn't ask.
We didn't ask. That's right, Your Honor. But I believe at the trial level, if defense counsel would have asked, they could have, under 513, potentially had those released, or at least for an in-camera review to see if there's anything in there that would have assisted the defense counsel in their cross-examination.
How does 513 cut here? Wouldn't it be reasonable for the civilian defense counsel to say, I can't get these in the light of 513?
No, I think that's unreasonable. I believe in the case of United States versus Reese, they explicitly said in that case that a juvenile cannot hide behind those records, or at least that they can be made available. There's a procedure set forth that they can be made available for an in-camera view of those, Your Honor.
Counsel, could you just summarize for me what your colorable showing is that these documents exist?
You know, the colorable showing in this is, and I hate to say it this way, Appellant asserts that it's common sense. She was at this lakeside hospital. We have to assume that these were doctors, PhDs there. That's what they do. They keep records. They keep notes of their counseling sessions that they do in these types of cases.
That seems to be more speculation than a colorable showing, though. I mean, you just said we're assuming this, we're assuming that.
Correct, Your Honor. And again, it goes to I believe the prejudice of this case and the catch-22 the defense is in, that they have a hard time showing that these records exist.
But in answer to your question from Judge Baker, I mean, it seems like you could have, the defense could have made a call to ascertain whether they even keep these records, you know, without even asking individually, did they have records for this person?
Correct, Your Honor. Again, appellant would assert that would be a lost cause just for the simple fact that those requests would have been denied. But again, that, of course, that is speculation, Your Honor.
Well, a request for the record may have been denied, but a request as to whether or not it is their practice to maintain records for a certain period of time may not have been, which would have added a little bit of weight to a colorable showing.
Potentially, yes, Your Honor.
What position did the government take with respect to whether such a order should be issued? Did the government support the defense or oppose the defense request?
The defense,
and when, in opposing the defense, what did the government say about the existence or non-existence of those records?
They've indicated that it was mere speculation, Your Honor, that we never made a showing that those records exist, and if they did exist, whether there'd be anything in those records that would be helpful to us.
And what was the defense response to that?
Again, our response, Your Honor, is based on United States versus Warner, that the particular defense dilemma that we're in, to not be able to show whether or not these records exist, to meet that prejudice prong, due to the ineffective assistance of counsel, those records aren't available to us. That is our argument, Your Honor.
Can the court take judicial notice of the health records legislation with respect to whether information like this could or could not be routinely disclosed?
I don't know the answer to that question, Your Honor.
Could the court take judicial notice of the practice of institutions of this nature as to whether records like this are or are not kept?
Again, I can't say, Your Honor. I don't know for sure on that. I would like to say yes, but I can't say with any affirmative belief it is. One case that I would like to point out that I did previously mention was United States versus Reese. In that case, the facts are almost identical to this case. However, in that case, it involved a request for these type of records at the trial.
Was that an IAC case? Ineffective assistance of counsel case?
It was not on this issue. I believe it was a case for a confrontation case. What happened with that case, and the facts are almost identical, the defense counsel knew prior to trial that this star witness had been there for behavior problems, alcohol, and drug abuse, and they requested those. They were denied, and a motion was filed to compel those, and that was denied. It was determined by the courts later on, that was, in effect, the incorrect decision, and those records should have been made available to them, at least for an in-camera view. And what that places us in is the unique predicament that in that Reese case, the defense counsel did the correct thing and got a favorable outcome from that. In this case, again, we cannot show that prejudice prong due to the fact that the defense counsel or that those mental health records are not made available to us. And that's what we're asking this court to do, is that this court set aside the Air Force Court decision with regard to Issue 2, post-trial discovery, and remand that for them to subpoena those records, determine if there's anything in those records that would help the defense, And in that case, if they were to reassess issue one, an appellate or an ineffective assistance of counsel claim.
Okay, as Judge Baker pointed out, there was substantial cross-examination of the prosecutrix in which inconsistencies and were brought out, correct?
Yes, right. Your Honor.
Okay. Assuming something exists, and assuming she should have poked around and tried to get it, where's the prejudice? What could have been added that would have changed the result?
Well, we know that CM's credibility was an issue there.
Right, and it was brought out
correct
substantially on cross-examination.
Yes, Your Honor.
What more is there that isn't just cumulative that would have actually changed the result? Where's the prejudice?
Well, the appellant believes that the prejudice would be there's the potential these mental health records should show possible psychiatric diagnosis, delusions, such as medication she was on.
The coroner already knew she had changed her position. She had lied.
Correct, yes.
Okay, what's to be added? Where's the prejudice? I mean, so she lied. Okay, well, she was also a nutcase. Well, number one, which way does that cut? But more importantly, where's your prejudice?
Your Honor, again, we can't show that prejudice without looking at those records, but what those records could show is perhaps maybe she'd done this before. Maybe she had fabricated these stories. We know that the members had to rely on some of her testimony there at trial because there was some physical evidence that corroborated what she was saying, both with the vomit that they found by her bed and the semen that they found over by the computer chair. So they had to give her some bit of credibility. Perhaps these records could show that she has no credibility at all.
Wait, the fact that there's physical evidence that corroborates what she said means that they gave credence, that they shouldn't have given credence to her if they had the records? I don't understand. I mean, doesn't the fact that there's physical evidence that corroborates what she said cut against an argument that there's prejudice even from not having the records?
I'm sorry. I think I misspoke there, Your Honor. What I think it goes to is that there was credibility with her there at trial. And I was pointing out that there was additionally physical evidence. That physical evidence alone in this case, the fact that they found vomit on the floor with the blacklight, wouldn't alone be enough to convict Sergeant Green in this case. They would have had to rely on her testimony where she indicated that he had choked her in the bedroom.
It's still not clear to me what the, let's assume that there were records kept of what occurred during the process of treatment.
Sure.
It's still not clear to me what those would have offered. I understand that it's within the realm of the possible that the people treating the victim in this case might have said, this is the biggest liar we've ever met in the history of the world, okay? But putting aside that, what might have been in that record that wasn't accessible to cross-examination at the trial?
Just to reiterate, Your Honor, again, I don't know, but what appellant would assert is that there's potential there, that there's, again, diagnosis, possible psychotic disorder, delusions, things of that nature that would render anything she said at trial
incredible. And if she asked at trial whether she was diagnosed with anything?
She was not. And the cross-examination as it relates to Lakeside was very brief at trial. It can be found on the joint appendix between 75 and 76. But
is the ineffectiveness the failure to cross-examine properly?
Potentially, but again, we would need those records to find out. At this point, our allegation.
Okay, let's say there's indication of a serious mental health issue.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the issue is credibility, in what sense was that not drawn out at trial through the cross-examination and the poking, the identification of the inconsistencies and so on?
Those were generalized, nothing specific as it related to her mental health and her cross-examination at trial, Your Honor. Potential's there that those records could have specific instances where perhaps we know she went there for lying is one of the issues. These records could potentially show specific diagnosis, medication she was on, things that could hurt her memory. We also know she was there for substance and drug abuse, which those alone could raise issues with a person's ability to recall.
But why do you need the mental record to indicate that? Can't you ask questions about that?
Certainly, counsel could ask specific, or isn't it true, questions, I believe under MRE 613. However, without those records, without defense's ability to back those up and potentially interview the victim, or the victim prior to trial, to question about those records, things that were in them, I think that would be much more beneficial and much more appropriate for the defense in that case.
I understand where you are.
Counsel, what specifically does the record show about what the Lakeside facility does and the types of people that they have there? In other words, if I'm going to find some records, what does this record of trial show us about what goes on there?
Not specifically in the record of trial, other than what the defense... I see that I'm out of time, Your Honor.
You can answer the question. Whether it's the record of trial or the record that we have on appeal, what do we have in the record before us as to what type of people are sent to Lakeside and what type of activity goes on there?
We know that it's a lockdown facility. It's called Lakeside. We know that it treats teenagers there, it treats adolescents with alcohol abuse and behavior problems, and that therapy goes on there as well. That was brought up through the defense investigator prior to Article 32 hearing, Your Honor.
Is there any place other than Green's affidavit that it is alleged that this is a psychiatric facility?
There is not, Your Honor.
You'll have an opportunity on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court. I am Captain Michael Rutkowski, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Jeremy Weber, we represent the United States in this case. This court can easily resolve both issues 1 and 2 on a lack of prejudice. Additionally, the government further contends that appellant did receive effective assistance of counsel from Ms. Ames, as she successfully defended him on 7 of the 13 specifications he faced, and the Air Force Court did not abuse its discretion when it denied appellant's post-trial discovery request because he failed to show, make a colorable showing, there was any records left to be seized at Lakeside 4 years later.
Is it your preferred position that we go directly to prejudice?
Your Honor, the government starts directly with prejudice based on Gutierrez, where this court stated that when that is the easiest means of resolving the case, they can. However, the government's fully prepared to argue why under prong 1 and 2 of Polk, this wasn't actually error, and even if there was an error, the appellant did receive effective assistance of counsel.
Counsel, what do you rely on for the proposition that an institution that's a lockdown facility that's engaged in treating teenagers for drug, alcohol abuse, behavior problems, and gives therapy would not have records of that treatment?
Well, Your Honor, essentially, we don't know what the records-keeping schedule is, as some of the court questions have elicited. We don't know anything, really, from Lakeside other than what's in the record of trial.
So do we have ineffective assistance of defense appellate counsel here? This doesn't appear to be a particularly complicated problem of finding out whether either assuming that an institution has those records or finding out that it doesn't. So is that the proposition that we're in here now, that we have ineffective assistance of defense appellate counsel? If it's so obvious that someone has to make an inquiry as opposed to relying on common sense as to the existence of records?
To the extent that comes up, Your Honor, the government would state that, again, our main argument on both issues is prejudice, lack of prejudice. And in this case, even if that is an issue now, the government would state, based on the corroborating evidence in the record of trial and based on the sufficient cross-examination of CM bringing out her credibility and truthfulness issues, there's no reasonable probability of a different outcome in this case. So,
no reasonable probability that if one of these therapy records contains records that the person who is being treated was not only described as a person who was an habitual liar, but she actually described various situations in which she lied about parallel circumstances that would have no bearing on this case?
Based on the specific facts in this case, Your Honor, we don't believe it would. In this case, we can determine that even if there was an error, it was non-prejudicial. based on the corroborating evidence and based on the sufficient cross-examination of CM. The corroborating evidence included DNA evidence of appellant's sperm, included testimony from a second victim who also witnesses several of the acts against CM. We had photographs of appellant's naked genitalia and his buttocks that CM was accurately able to describe. We had fluids on the carpet consistent with her allegation of choking. There was specific corroborating evidence from sources outside of CM's testimony that on the six specifications appellant was convicted of, all corroborated what she had to say.
You said seven earlier. You mean six or seven?
The math problem, Your Honor. He was acquitted on seven, convicted of six of the 13. The six that he was convicted of all had corroborating evidence. Additionally, as this court has already elicited, CM was sufficiently cross-examination on not only her stay at Lakeside, but also her credibility problems. She admitted lying. She admitted lying to appellant. She admitted that she believes everybody lies. She stated that she previously lied about being hit with a closed fist in her face by appellant. And she did admit that she prior to trial recanted all the allegations against appellant and is now reinstituting those allegations. In short, her credibility was fully in question in front of the members, and any additional information in these records would be of diminished value based on the corroborating evidence.
Is it the government's view that the issue on corroboration is not what the members said during the Q&A period afterwards, but the fact that the record reflects corroboration on those charges?
The record and the specific findings in this case definitely reflect corroboration on those charges.
Is the government relying on what the member said, and does the government view that as an appropriate fact for the CCA to consider?
Concerning the statement of the members, Your Honor, the government make 2 points. One, to just make it completely clear, this is not something elicited by the government or even provided to the Air Force Court by the government.
Right. My question is it appropriate for the CCA to consider such statements in doing its findings, its factual review and legal sufficiency review?
Your Honor,
it's a yes or no question.
Under the specific circumstances of this case, although it's not advisable, I think it would be appropriate. RCM 922 states that the council cannot question or poll the members about their verdict. This appears to be, from the facts submitted to the Air Force Court, something just voluntarily offered up.
What about 509?
509, Your Honor, would be a privilege states against them disclosing any information. Again, even if this court has any concerns about that, based on the corroboration and the specific findings, we don't feel it impacts the fairness of this trial.
What about MRE 606B that says that members can't testify as to anything that occurred during deliberations? Here, essentially, you're trying to use those statements as testimony.
And again, Your Honor, the government feels that since it was put into the record by appellant, they had to comment on it. But we feel that the specific findings in this case and the corroborating evidence speaks for itself. That statement is basically unnecessary from the members because specifically on two of the specifications where it alleged diverse occasions, they found him, by findings and exceptions, guilty of a single violation and gave specific details showing that they were only using those specifications where they had corroborating information.
I think the questions from the court are not whether or not we can disregard it. The questions are whether or not, as a matter of law, it was proper for the CCA to consider it.
And, Your Honor, unfortunately, I don't have a case to point to or anything else for that answer. Essentially, it's not clear on the facts straight how this happened. It appears it was just a voluntarily offered statement.
Well, we're not asking how it came about. We're asking whether or not it is appropriate for the CCA to consider statements made by panel members as to what occurred in deliberations.
And again, Your Honor, unfortunately, I don't believe I have an answer for that question.
Isn't it typically the position of the government that none of that evidence can ever come in, that is statements that court-martial panel members say about what went on in the deliberation? An after-the-fact analysis by the court-martial members is never admissible except for some very narrow circumstances, none of which are pertinent here?
Again, Your Honor, that may be the general case.
You want us to write an opinion that says, door's now open, whatever members say afterwards, so long as it's not solicited by the government, can come in. It can come in on behalf of the defense, too, to impeach the verdicts of
guilty. In fairness, the government's not taking a view. Is that your position at this point?
Correct, Your Honor. Yeah. That's why we feel the specific findings in this case, the corroborating evidence, is what the proof is. And
I understand that. Kind of, what do we do about the statement in the Court of Criminal Appeals opinion on page 4 of the slip opinion? How does that affect this, the legality of their legal and factual review under Article 66?
Your Honor, that statement on page 4 is going under the Air Force Court's determination that there was no prejudice, and that's just one of many things that they state as the reason why there was no prejudice. The government would contend, based on the specific findings of corroboration, it's simply just a restatement of what was already known to the Air Force Court at that point. It was something that they already had the record of trial. They already had the information in the record of trial. That's something that was submitted by the appellant on appeal. It wasn't something that was in the record of trial. So they already had all the information they needed, and that's simply just an extrajudicial statement that was not necessary. Turning back to the issues in this case, along with the fact that there's no prejudice, the government would contend that appellant's counsel was the effective assistance counsel he was guaranteed under their Sixth Amendment. This court takes a highly deferential review of counsel's performance that is not colored by hindsight and engages in the strong presumption that their conduct fell within the wide range of professional assistance. Our appellant is asking this court to basically look at one pretrial decision. When you look at the entire record as a whole, you'll find that Ms. Ames was an effective advocate for appellant. She successfully defended him on 7 of the 13 specifications, including the most serious specification, the carnal knowledge one. She reduced his punitive exposure from 87 years to 38 years. As stated, 2 of the specifications alleged diverse occasions. She had those reduced to fines of a single violation each. Appellant ultimately received only 4 years confinement for crimes involving the sexual and physical assaults on 2 underage girls. And there was the effective cross-examination that led to acquittals on all specifications that only had CM as evidence. In short, the government contends he did receive effective assistance under a second prong of. If there are no further questions on issue 1, I'll briefly touch on issue 2. The Air Force Court did not abuse its discretion in denying appellant's post-trial discovery request because, as this court has pointed out, appellant failed to present any information from Lakeside or anything else to demonstrate that there was a colorable showing that some records still existed to be compelled. Additionally, it's important to note appellant's discovery request, the post-trial discovery request, was for all records at Lakeside. It wasn't for all counseling records. It was specifically for psychological, psychiatric, or mental health records. Appellant now states that he's in Catch-22. He can't prove what's in the psychiatric records without having the psychiatric records. The government would contend that because appellant failed to show there's any records still to be held, any Catch-22 is created by
appellant. I'll go back to my earlier question, and I understand this may put you in a difficult position with with opposing counsel here, but if that's the case, if the problem here is that they didn't even establish that records exist in an institution that would normally keep records, and we're not allowed to, in the government's view, apply a common sense determination that that an institution like this would keep those records, we're going to reject this case on the basis that counsel didn't make a simple phone call to determine that records exist. Why don't we have an effective assistance of appellate counsel here?
Again, Your Honor, for the main point of the government's case is the lack of prejudice. And even if this court feels that's an issue, that issue can be decided on lack of prejudice as well. Again, with the corroborating evidence and the specific findings in this case and the attack on Sam's credibility, as this court has basically stated, it doesn't matter what's in the records. The records could say she's got a worse record for telling the truth than Pinocchio. But when it comes down to it, she can't create appellant's firm. She can't force another person to testify and say they were assaulted too. There's more than enough evidence for the 6 specifications she's convicted of to say that it really would have had no impact on the ultimate outcome of this case. Accordingly, not only for the colorable showing, but also for the lack of reasonable probability of an outcome being different, the Air Force Court did not abuse its discretion in denying the post-trial discovery request. If there are no further questions, may I briefly conclude? Appellant's counsel in this case was effective and effectively represented the appellant at trial. Additionally, the Air Force Court did not abuse its discretion based on the lack of colorable showing and the lack of reasonable probability that the outcome would have been different if these records had been produced. Accordingly, this court should affirm the finding of the sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have a rebuttal?
Your Honor, if I could, I would like to touch on the issue of the affidavit involving the members, talking a little bit about the deliberations that took place. Appellant doesn't assert that that it is the sole reason that this court should find against the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals. We certainly think it's a relevant factor with regard to that, for the simple fact that or one reason why that decision was wrong. And I think the court has spoke on this issue, United States versus Key, when the Air Force Court specifically said that they wanted to consider that type of evidence because it's incompetent evidence. And United States versus Loving points out some Supreme Court cases. United States versus Tanner kind of lays out the policy reason why we wouldn't rely on those. But again, appellant doesn't assert that that's the reason why the Air Force Court should be wrong.
If the Air Force Court was wrong on that for purposes of legal sufficiency, is there anything in the record that would show that they were incorrect for purposes of factual sufficiency? And if they weren't incorrect on that, if they didn't rely on that for factual sufficiency, can't we simply disregard at our level anything that the Court of Criminal Appeals said about the affidavits from the members?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe you could just disregard anything they said about that.
Okay, let's talk about prejudice. The government's argument has been, even if the records had been made available, they would not contain anything that would overcome the list that the government has given of corroborating and physical and testimonial evidence in this case. So let's assume that you have access to the records. What possibly could one of those records say that would undermine the list of physical and testimonial evidence that the government has relied on for showing no prejudice?
Helen, asserts that we don't know at this point, Your Honor.
At this point, you may not know what's in those records, but why can't you tell us what those records might say,
okay,
if you were able to discover them, that is a reasonable understanding of what takes place in a therapy session, what could be in there that would help you at this point?
Yes, Your Honor. It could specifically outline different psychiatric diagnoses that CM had in this case, both on a psychotic level and a neurotic level. Could also tend to show what type of medication she was taking. If she had ever fabricated stories like this before, if she had ever been sexually molested before, could also point to the issues where she says, or that we know she was there for lying. Why was she there for lying? What specific things did therapy uncover with that? We also know that sexual activity was an issue there too. Why she went there. We can uncover issues with that. We know she was there for drugs. What drugs was she using? What these drugs have on effect on the mind as far as recalling events or having memory of events. Those are all.
As I understand the government's argument is that even if you could discover all those things, the other evidence in this case is so strong that you wouldn't prevail. And what's your response to that?
I don't think the evidence is so strong with that respect, Your Honor. I believe that, again, the members had to rely on her testimony for certain instances, with the one exception where the only victim was LS for grabbing her breast. All those other five specifications and charges he was found guilty of involved CM giving testimony.
Do you agree that all of those instances had other corroborating evidence, as the government argued in their brief?
No, not all of them. One of them, in fact, where the appellant is alleged to have grabbed CM's breast in the kitchen, LS specifically says she didn't see that. Now, she was in the vicinity at the time. Again, that was one where credibility would have to go entirely to CM. There was also the issue where he was found guilty of diverse assaults on CM. LS only corroborated one of those assaults. She testified to, I believe, five or six other assaults in addition to that. So the members would have relied on her testimony to find him guilty of those additional assaults on diverse occasions, Your Honor.
What about the physical evidence? What about the physical evidence?
Certainly that corroborates her testimony with regards to the choking event and the sodomy. But again, that physical evidence is circumstantial. It's fairly weak. It's questionable whether the members could only convict on that evidence alone without hearing her testimony that relates what exactly happened with that physical evidence and why it was found. I see that I'm out of time. Do you mind
if you have an opportunity to conclude?
Thank you, Your Honor. Accordingly, appellant respectfully requests this court set aside the decision of the United States Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals with respect to Issue 2 involving post trial discovery and have the lower court subpoena the mental health records of CM and then conduct a new review of Issue 1.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted. The court will be in recess until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.